हरिः ॐ सह न भवतु सह नो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 23. So, important verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.429. Yad niruktam vachasa nirupitam diyakshabhir va manaso ta yasya mabhut swarupam gunarupa hitatat savai gunapaya visarga lakshana. Anything expressed by material vibrations, anything ascertained by material intelligence, and anything experienced by the material senses or concocted within the material mind is but an effect of the modes of material nature, and therefore has nothing to do with the real nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord is beyond the creation of this material world, for He is the source of the material qualities in creation. As the cause of all causes, He exists before the creation and after the creation. I wish to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Prajapati Daksha reciting the Hamsaguya prayers. So it means anything that we're experiencing here, that's always material. Right? So only when it's endowed with the chit potency, right? Then we're getting a spiritual effect. But if it's not connected to the Supreme Lord in Parampara, then whatever we're dealing with is just by the modes of nature. So that's why it's never considered something more special. Because the modes of nature then are going to do things according to how the material nature is going to function, right? How we're going to receive our karma, you know, others, that whole combination. So that all put together is what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. Though, because we've freely identified with the material situation, therefore we're going to think that this new material situation coming up from the modes of nature is my free will. But it's not, it's just material. So therefore you can only understand the Supreme Lord by His grace. Like that. You can't understand it in another way, because He's being beyond the creation. He's the source of the creation. But as you said, it's non-different from Him, but it's different from Him as a person. Just like the man and his money are non-different, but they're different. Right? Just because you know money doesn't mean you know the man. So like that. So. Okay. Okay, chapter 5. Nard Muni cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Pratigya. Unless one gets the association of a devotee like Nard Muni or his servant in the disciplic successions, one's dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awoken. Right? Mm-hmm. So this natural aspect of renunciation means giving up attachment to this material world. That can't be done unless you come in contact with somebody in the Vaishnava Parampara. So in this case, we're talking about Nard Muni. So someone in this line, other than that, you are not going to. Because we're just going to, by the modes of nature, just continue on being interested in the modes of nature. Right? Because everything that comes from Krishna is complete. So the material energy is complete in itself. Right? It means it's dependent upon the Lord, but it's complete in itself in that you can stay in the material world forever. Right? So unless you come in contact with the devotees, only then you can start thinking that there's something else, that there's something beyond, and one can even consider giving up desires here. So it just means we're transferring to another sphere, you know, instead of the material sphere, transferring to the spiritual. So life goes on, the senses are engaged, the mind intelligence works, but instead of it being based on lust and ourselves, it's based on love and on serving Krishna and the devotees.
Yeah. With the tip potency we latch on to, because we're tattvasta, so in order to give up the material, we have to be in touch with the parampara.
We have to be in touch with, otherwise how do you change? Yeah. If we're only experiencing mundane, how would you get an understanding of what's beyond?
And you can't hang there in nothingness. You have to...
No, we're tattvasta, we're too small.
Yeah.
You either have to be under the internal or the external. So it's either you're going to be under the person or under the shadow.
Yes.
We can't just, you know, strike any freelance, you know, jiva. You know, we just float around the universe as we please.
Yeah.
It won't happen.
No.
This question.
It feels like it's not specific.
Too much of something last night before you took rest.
No, not enough.
Okay. Now that's a real brahmachari answer. Yeah. Was all that halva you ate? I said, no, I only eat half the normal amount. Okay. Yes.
So the getting tired of the material happens independently of the association of the potency.
Yes, because the point is what happens when you get tired of the material energy?
Start looking.
You start looking for something else that's new. You know, you get tired of one activity, you take up another.
Yes.
You know? Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, it's like you get tired of, you know, going on vacation to one place, you go to another, and then another. And when you get tired of vacation, you stay at home. You really get tired of that, then the next year you're out on vacation again. You understand? So the point is you get tired, but you don't take advantage. So when you come in contact with the spiritual, then you get tired, here's an alternative. So then you can take it up.
But the modes of nature can give a lot of variety.
They're the shadow of the spiritual world, so of course they can.
Yeah.
But the amount of potency that's there in them is very minimal. That's why the soul can get attracted by the contact with the Lord, because that's more attuned to one's actual nature. It means if we're as brilliant as the sun, and we're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair, and the sun is how big?
Pretty big.
Yeah, and then it has the equal light.
Yeah.
So that means whatever's around here is not going to offer very much.
We're not there yet.
Yes. Yes.
So because the material world can keep changing, keep giving variety. So
yes, but it's within the same. You know what I'm saying? The point is because it's not connected to us, what taste will we get? Because we're not actually getting a real... we're not getting a real live taste. You understand? So that's the whole problem, is that we're getting what we think will be, but it's like we can't experience, we are part of Krishna, so technically we can't experience other than with Krishna. So when we are trying to experience separate from Krishna, then Krishna is going to put in the energy so that we get experience, but only how much is the work we've done. And because work being done selfishly and on the material platforms are very meager, the results we get are very meager.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. But when you connect that endeavor to Krishna, the person, then you're connected to the, you know, the totality of happiness. So then the soul experiences something, you know, more. Something beyond themselves, because whatever you get in the material world will be less than your own inherent happiness, which is Atmarama. You know, that's why I said, so the happiness of being in Brahman is millions of times greater than here. And that's just our own happiness. but it's not dynamic. So because we're a person, static happiness is not going to work. You know what I'm saying? It has to be dynamic. You're hot, you go into a cool room. The dynamics between being hot and coming to cool, that's where the happiness is. You notice it. That's where the experience. Once you become cool and adjusted, it's just normal.
Yeah.
You understand? So at that point, that static happiness is no longer something that attracts your attention. So that's the point. Atmarama, that's the idea. Merging in Brahman or being in the Atmaram stage can never satisfy a soul.
Static can be go from unnoticed to uncomfortable. It can only go down, actually. If it's not uncomfortable, you don't notice.
Yes. It's only going
so it's
from...
Only the
there's a you're removing a problem.
Yeah.
So that's the thing, is that in the spiritual world, you're doing something positive. In the material world, it's you're removing the problem. Okay, let us say... You know, take things like eating, okay? Now here, we will consider something, you know, eating is happiness, right?
Yes.
But what actually are we doing?
We're removing the problem of hunger.
We're removing the problem of hunger, because if you're not hungry,
it's not.
There's no happiness in eating.
But yeah, I'll agree.
Okay, let's say if there's no capacity, there's no
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Does that work?
Yeah.
You know, just the you know, volume of ghee on the fingers is not enough to give you anything. Right? Okay. Then you have another problem. Your stomach's so full. Right?
Yes.
You
know, and
then, you understand? Yes. So in other words, we're removing the problem from a problem up to neutral.
Yes.
And we call that process happiness. But the spiritual world, it's the other way. It's actually the eating prasad, experiencing Krishna, the association of Krishna, the devotees, that takes it forward. Yes. And so it never goes away. This one goes from here to there, and it stops. Then again, and it stops. The other one, it gets, but it always remains.
Way better.
You understand? So that's why we say is there is no real happiness in the material world, because it's always just removing the negative. It never actually gets to the positive. It can't. Right? Because anything here is removing whatever is a problem for the jiva. But you're not actually adding anything positive that's connected to Krishna. Otherwise, we can only experience the neutral state of Brahman, right? The Tathasta position. But when you connect to Krishna, then you taste the positive of personal relationships. So that's where Ananda actually comes in. See, the happiness of Brahman is only sat. So it's just where, just, how you say, marinating in our own, you know, existence. You know, does that make sense? And so there's not, Ananda isn't actually being applied, because Ananda comes from chit, right? So when the kriya potency is there, there's activity, that gives a result, that's where the Ananda is going to come. Right? Because here it's a reflection, it works like that. You're doing nothing, you know, it's nice, you know, it has its pleasure doing nothing, but that's only in comparison to having been doing a lot. If you always just do nothing, then you don't appreciate doing nothing.
So how about the mode of passion? It would make it look like something is being achieved, something positive is being achieved.
Yes, but it's only what you've projected. Because the same thing that you say is happiness, someone else would say that's a miserable condition. You know, you would love to go to the big gala and everything like that, and the people who always have to go to those, and oh no, another one, you know? You know, so okay, you know, get out the, you know, the false smile, and you know, like that, and then you're so glad when you get out of there, pull off your tie, and you can just relax. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is it's not... One person says this will be nice, the other person says it won't. You know, one person says you're in the city, just be nice to get out in the country, and the guy in the country, wow, let's go to the city. You know what I'm saying? Or people who live in a cold climate go to a hot climate for a vacation, people in a hot climate go to a cold climate. So that's the thing, is it's just we project that will be good. It's not that it's good. So we create the pain, and then we remove that pain. That's the Prabhupada mentions. That's the asuric mentality. Put yourself in a dangerous condition, get out of it, and then you call that happiness, right? You're in an airplane, you jump out at 10,000 feet. That's dangerous. But then the chute actually does open, and you land on the ground without breaking both legs, and you're happy. You consider that was great. You know? So that's the whole point, is you put yourself in a dangerous condition, and then it went all right. You know, you ski down the side of the mountain, you didn't hit a tree, you didn't hit a rock, you didn't go off a cliff, you didn't start an avalanche, you know, and you didn't make an idiot of yourself, you know, and so life's great. You understand? That's the problem. Is we create the problem, and so we can remove it. Because if there's no problem, then...
That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's... Yeah.
Although tathasta by nature, it would be logical if we go back to the tathasta position, then we, you know, naturally happy. But it's not exactly...
No, because where tathasta means we're actually part of... The tathasta element means we can either function under the internal or external. But we're actually part of the internal. So we'll only actually be happy when we're situated in internal. So being involved in the external, in karma, doesn't work. Being involved just in Brahman, just being tathasta, doesn't work. So we actually have to be in the positive and be in devotion or service.
So tathasta is the position, it's not the nature of the soul.
No, it's a position. It's not that that's our natural state and we're being, you know, kind of pushed. It would be nice if we did that. No, because we are persons, we have to interact. So the point is we'll either interact in the spiritual or in the material, right? The point is, and it's not, we're not independent. I mean, it's just like Krishna's energy is not independent of him. We're not independent of Krishna's energy, right? So in other words, we're always dependent upon him. It's just a matter of whether it's through the internal potency or through the external. Because even we're functioning in the external potency, we're still dependent upon Krishna to be able to see, hear, taste. He's the one that is everything and seeing everything. Because for him, he can see everything because it's all him. So we're getting a slight reflection of that, you know, whatever little bit of that potency is there in our intelligence, in the consciousness, right? That's reflected off the intelligence, then that goes through the senses. The mind then perceives that, and then we say that's sense perception, right? But that's why it's the intelligence that's able to reflect the consciousness. That reflects onto the object. You understand? Just like if you had a light and you had a mirror and then you reflect onto an object, you can... But then what's seeing it? Then the mind is seeing it. Right? So that's, you know, again, another. Or say, here's the mind. Intelligence reflects off of that onto the object, back onto the mind. Does that make sense? So it's still Krishna's arrangement. We're still dependent upon him. Mm-hmm. But it's unseen. While in the spiritual potency, then it's directly seen that it's Krishna. Because the internal potency is always serving Krishna. We're always assisting the internal potency. Therefore, you know, we're connected to Krishna. Well, in the material world, Krishna's there making material energy work. We're interacting with material energy. We don't even know it's Krishna that we're after. So that's the illusion. So the living entity can't separate themselves from the Lord. There's no question of it. So this idea of being just tathasta on your own in Brahman doesn't work. That's why we you know, go to great lengths to point out both the karmis and the jnanis are missing the point. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's only when we come to that point of bhakti, then it actually becomes dynamic. That's the natural state. Is that true? Yeah. And because it's positive, then it's unlimitedly greater than that tathasta position. Right? Means the platform of Brahman is millions of times greater, but there's a number to it.
Yeah.
But then from there to the platform of prema, there's no number given, it's unlimited, because it's always expanding. Brahman, being Tathasta, it comes up to a point and stays like that, never gets more. You know, even though Brahman is unlimited, we're not. Right? And so Brahman stays as it is, we stay as we are, and it's, nothing changes. So there's a limit. Though it's much greater than what you can get out of karma. But the point is that in the spiritual world, you do everything according to devotion and to Krishna. Then that level, because Krishna is unlimited and it's dynamic, the interaction with Him, the personal relationship, therefore the experience is unlimited. And that's just the aspect of Krishna. Right? So you know, that would say, okay, that's great. What you're throwing into it is the other living entities also. Their happiness gained from that. Your happiness seeing them happy. Krishna becoming happier seeing that. So everything is just dynamically nourishing each other and just growing. That's why it's unlimited. You can't express it. It can't be described. You know, they just give an indication that it's a lot more. You know, it's like in, what do you call it? I think the pidgin English in, pidgin English. I think it's like something's big, you say, it's big. You want to say it's more, you know, bigger than that, you don't say it's more big or really big, you just say big. So that's all you can do is kind of give an indication. Okay. There is no words. Yes. No, it's just the nature. If you're going to have, you have day, right? So naturally, then what day is significant because there's night. So you have a position in between. The sandhya, right? That's us. Now, technically, is the Sunday a part of the day or the night? It's both, but at the same time, in reality, what do we call Sunday? The twilight. But what makes it Sunday? What actually dynamically makes it work? Light is going off, not dark is coming in. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the point. We're part of the light. So we can either be going out or coming in. It's just whichever sandhya you want to take. So here we're the evening sandhya. That's why we get so inspired by the evening. We're generally asleep in the morning, right? So that's the point, is that those who are awake, the spiritual, they're awake for the morning sandhya. Right? Is that? Yes. Yes. Yes, it all comes down to mercy. Means is that, but one has to be interested in that mercy if you want to take advantage. The original mercy, that's just coming because of the devotees. They just decide to go out and do something, and you happen to bump into them. Right? Of course, it's Krishna's arrangement. He's seen that there's some interest, but we don't even know what we're interested in. We say, "Oh, I want to know what's happening, what's going on, why is life like this." We have no concept of spiritual. So Krishna puts us in contact with the devotees, who then introduce us to spiritual. So this idea is, no, I was a seeker and all that, you know. That's just like, seeker of what? You know what I'm saying? We don't know what's spiritual. No, I was always into spiritual. It's just, what you called spiritual wasn't spiritual. You know, lighting some incense and sitting there and going, om, that's not spiritual. It's all based on ourselves. So that means, that's why Prabhupada said he made our fortune. Because otherwise we were quite, satisfied in our unhappiness in the material world. And then along come the devotees. Does that make sense? And so then that's when we contact, that's what it means. Unless one gets the association of a devotee like Narad Muni or a servant in the disciplic succession, one's dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awakened. Right? So that means it's natural there for the jiva to function that capacity, but until we contact, it won't happen. So when we tap in, that's them who wakes it up. That's why the devotees are so important, because they're the one that awaken this in us. Otherwise, we'll go on in our, you know, our thoughts. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing, is then through the agency of the devotees, then we get Krishna's mercy. Does that make sense? That's why devotees are so important. So we in general associate with devotees, but then we associate with those who we feel are more advanced, that we're able to appreciate that mood so that we try to advance ourselves. The idea of associating with those who are more advanced, we therefore want to advance. Well, if we associate with, you know, wallahs that sit around and everything's, you know, cholega, you know, it's okay, don't worry about it, you know, don't get fanatic, you know, then we'll stay like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay? Yes. The pratigya of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 41. According to Daksha's philosophy, one should become implicated in material enjoyment so that after experiencing the distress of such enjoyment, one will automatically renounce. Material nature, however, is so strong that although a man suffers at every step, he will not cease his attempts to enjoy. Tripdyanti, Neha, Kripana, Bahu, Dukha, Bhajaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45. Right? Because what will you do? Means even you're trying to be renounced, we're trying to be happy out of that renunciation. It's just a trick. Yeah. Right? So it's just Maya's trick. Like we say, you go out and do something that doesn't work, you want to be renounced, so then you stay at home. But when you stay at home, you'll try to do something there to be happy. And if it works, it'll keep you going a few times. But, you know, if it doesn't work, then you'll back going out. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's just the way it works. So there's no question of actually being renounced. So Daksha's idea is, okay, we'll give up that one thing, but then you'll take up another. We had this one devotee here in Mayapur. He did all the original gardens here. Real genius when it came to agriculture, horticulture. He was and design. He was good. And so then, but he was so focused, you know, in doing things and designing and all that, because he'd do everything in his head. I don't even think he drew things. There were nothing drawn. So he'd be so absorbed in his head that even his eating, he was just absorbed. And, you know, he liked to eat. But if you eat too much, you know, you focused on eat too much, you get sick. So he would absorb himself in something that you could eat an unlimited amount and not get sick. You know? So, but every 2 weeks he was on a different diet. You know, you eat 10 kilos of mangoes for 2 weeks. Yeah. After that, you don't want to see another mango until next year. So the whole rest of the season, he didn't eat mangoes. You know, the season, you know, goes for some time. 2 weeks, you know, so that was it. You know what I'm saying? So that people will do that. So the people who only get a little bit, it appears that it can be drawn out. But the people who are successful in getting and fulfilling that desire, then they have to move on to something else. Yes. Yes, yes, third class intelligence here. Means it's as good as it goes here. He learns, but the point is he's not really learning. Real knowledge, real learning is devotional service. Yes. Under the circumstances, unless one gets the association of a devotee like Narad Muni or a servant in the specific succession, one's dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awakened. It is not a fact that because material enjoyment involves so many painful conditions, one will automatically become detached. One needs the blessings of a devotee like Narad Muni. Then one can renounce his attachment from the material world by attaching yourself to the spiritual world. See, the philosophy here is working on the principle that the living entity is naturally detached. The living entity is not naturally detached at all. They exist, they do things, they get results. Where's detachment? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, it's a matter of being detached from one thing and being attached to another. That we do regularly. We get attached to something, you know, it works out, we get bored of it, or it doesn't work out, and then we get frustrated and we move on to something else. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is we just move from one thing to the next. So we are detached. So it's just a matter of giving up the material world and moving on to the spiritual world. That's the renunciation that we're talking about. Because in the spiritual world, then moving on from one engagement to a next, that's not a problem because it's always about Krishna. So it's always eternal. Because it's Krishna, it's eternal. Some service is done. Krishna cooked for Krishna, you know, unlimited, you know, lifetimes of Brahma ago, one preparation. He's still enjoying the happiness of that today. It doesn't go away. He's eternal. He is everything. So there it doesn't go away. Here, it because you're dealing with dead matter, and then energy is put into it, energy goes away, it's dead. You know what I'm saying? The energy is there in the taste, and then because it's dead matter, it goes away, it's gone. The mind is dead matter, it's gone. Yes?
Right, can we say that we are attached because we are dependent by nature?
Yes, we're dependent by nature.
So
we're dependent of dependent.
Yeah.
Means that the internal and external potency are dependent, and we're dependent upon the dependent. So we're in it, because the others, they're basically unlimited. But we're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. You know, that's... There's unlimited amounts of us, but each one of us is not unlimited. You know, we may have that moment where we feel like it, you know, I am the, what do you call it? I am the king of the world, you know, that whole scene. But, you know, in the end, it doesn't work out very good. You don't hear many kings freezing to death. Right? No. Stabbed, poisoned, you know, like that, yes. Freezing, no. Chapter 5 summarizes questions and answers. Several rhetorical questions are uttered throughout this chapter, but do not come under the study. One of the simplest. And then if you get at the end of the chapter that there's no essay question, it's like, you know, perfection.
Next chapter.
Sorry?
Next chapter. Is
oh, next chapter. But it doesn't have the everything's just rhetorical questions.
More dolphin chapter. More dolphin chapter.
Yes. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter relates how all the sons of Daksha were delivered from the clutches of the material energy by following the advice of Narada, who was therefore cursed by Daksha. Right? So they got the association of Narada. They became renounced from the material world. Right? But that's not Daksha's concept of renunciation. His point is, no, you have to go through this process and become renounced. And in the process, you also do some benefit. Well, but he's not looking at it. Actually, to become detached from the material world is the goal. So if you can become detached from the goal in the beginning, why you wouldn't do it? Right? In other words, it'd be like this. Let us say your goal is to make a whole, you know, oodles of money, you know, like, you know, wheelbarrows full of money, right? It'd be a more narrow audience. Okay. Yeah. Like that. So you only have 3 representatives here, so that would fully appreciate us. Because like it's a more serious note here. There's a lighter note we can use. So now we have 2 methods. One is we invest, and then, you know, basically with a little bit of endeavor, we get back our, you know, bucketfuls of money. The other one, you have to put in, you know, trudge at it, work at it the whole life, slowly bring it up, And finally, at the end of life, you know, when you're old and your teeth are loose and all that, then you get that money. Which one would you choose? The first one, right? So that's what Narada Muni's offering. But then Daksha is so foolish, he thinks, no, the second one is the real one. That's being a man, that's being responsible. The other one, you're cheating, you're being irresponsible, you know, you're not. But the point is, the material world is about going back to Godhead, not about doing your duties perfectly. Right? So if you do your duties perfectly connected to Krishna, that's fine. But if you do your duties perfectly not connected to Krishna, then that's a waste of time. It's a nicer waste of time than not doing your duties and not going back to Godhead. Does that make sense?
So that's just renunciation of the fruit.
Yes, so therefore it's fruit, because your renunciation is then you'll get something better. You know, a better birth, you know, heavenly facilities, or, you know, merging in Brahman. You'll get something from it. But it's not about actually Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
That child does not have any skin for master.
We don't hear of it. We haven't heard of him being instructed by the Pachetas. You know, we haven't heard him being instructed by Narad Muni, though he was his brother. Definitely not going to be instructed by Shiva, who was his brother. Lakshmi didn't give him any, and he never hangs out with the four Kumaras, so that's kind of it.
And even with the Lord?
Yeah, Brahma.
Even with the Lord, he did not receive.
Well, that's the Narad.
Yeah.
Even with the Lord?
Yeah, no, he didn't ask for instructions or that. That's why it said he didn't ask for bhakti, the Lord didn't give him bhakti.
Yes.
But he's smart, he turned to the Lord for his material desires, so therefore he gets that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? He gets that. And so he gets nicer than anyone, right? You know, we're seeing these kings, they're praying to the Lord, and they're getting, you know, one child or this or that. He's getting tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of children, right? So, you know, he's doing okay when it comes to kids.
Sounds a little much to me.
Huh?
Sounds a little much to me.
Yeah.
He seems to be able to deal with it.
Of course, he's empowered. That's the point, so he can deal with it. I'm just thinking of, you know, if the Marwaris were around at that time, then, you know, you could just imagine the diaper factory, and those guys would be billionaires. You know?
They'd be doing good.
Yeah. You know, they'd make, Bill Gates and those guys look like small-timers.
Yeah. Dabbling with their computers.
Yeah. He's got the diaper king, diaper. You know. Yeah. Diaper king of the universe. Right? Yeah.
We will take your threat.
Yes. 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 Sorry?
Can we say Paksha path, slow path, is more safe?
Is more safe. More. How do you define safe?
like if I immediately had to take sannyasi or renounce, like a.
Just for how many people die in China just walking across the street or in car accidents or choke on peanuts or something? Not many. Really? In America, it's about 80,000 a year die in car accidents. Like that. So, and there's 250, you know, or plus million. China's four times that. Six now.
Yeah, it's
1.5 billion. 1.5 now?
Yeah.
What's India?
1.2.
Really? Because there was a time when India was ahead.
Wow.
Huh?
We don't remember those.
Yeah, it was 1.1 and 1.2. So India's just maintaining, because I guess they're all going to America.
Sure.
You understand material life? Is it safe? So then, what's the what? That's what I'm saying. Why are you? Have you ever heard the saying? better to have loved than and lost than never loved at all. You heard that one? So at least they tried. You know, in other words, Bharat Maharaj is in the Bhagavatam. Do you know anyone from China in the Bhagavatam? Is the Yellow Emperor in the Bhagavatam? No. Right? Does Narad Muni talk about all the terracotta soldiers in Xi'an? The Great Wall? How do you say it? The Law of Ten? No? Okay. So, what's the problem with Bharat Maharaj? At least he's that advanced. And so we're not going to try to advance, you know, because maybe we'll fall down. You know, I won't try to make money because I might lose money. I won't get married because maybe my wife will be upset with me. You know, I won't eat lunch because I might choke on a peanut. Okay, and how many grihasthas got married unnaturally and it broke up and made a total mess? Is there any comparison? Probably not. In your experience, how many sannyasis have fallen down? Okay, one or two, and how long have you been around? How long have you been in Krishna consciousness?
20 years.
20 years. So two people in 20 years, that's one every 10 years. How many marriages have fallen apart in that 20 years?
No.
In this movement?
In my experience,
like,
at least 10.
Yeah, in your experience, at least 10. But when we're talking sannyasis, we're talking the whole international community here. Okay? So then if we take that into consideration, then... Only if you make it that way. Previously, it didn't create any problem at all. Sannyasis fell down, it didn't ruffle anybody's feathers because everybody was actually not looking for an excuse to give up Krishna consciousness. Now that they're looking for an excuse, just dying for an excuse, then, oh, it's bigger, it's greater, it's this. No, it's not. Ruining a child's life by a mother and father not being able to work together and then fighting over the kids and all that, that's way worse. That damage is way worse than whatever you get by a sannyasi falling down. It's just that grihasthas won't admit that and everybody's, you know, going on that we're cool. But actually that's much more devastating on the social fabric than a sannyasi falling down. You understand? What's your connection with the sannyasi? You have any legal connection with the sannyasi? No. But the children have legal actual with their parents. Husband and wife divorced, okay? Are they connected anymore? No. But the child, that's still their mother, that's still their father. And they deal with them as if they're a possession. Who's going to fight over it? We just had one person leave the class to go back to their country to fight over their kid in court. You know, the kid's a possession. Now, you're going to tell me that that's so much better than a sannyasi falling down. Light years of advance. Right? And then people go after the teachers saying they're the ones causing the problem. Understand? If you had real parents, there'd be no problems with sannyasis, no problems with teachers. So actually the problem's with authority. It's an excuse how not to surrender to authority. That's the real bottom line. It has nothing to do with, oh, sannyasis, this, that. What do Westerners know of sannyasis? You know what I'm saying?
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? Shaolin's there, the government comes in, burns the place to the ground, the monks all disappear, some of them go out, get jobs, selling tofu or something like that, get married, have a family. Is China falling apart?
Nobody cares.
So that's the reality. Nobody cares if a sannyasi falls down. It's only makes it socially becomes one because we don't like authority. Then we make it into a whole thing of how this and how that. So what are we trying to prove? There shouldn't be authority because then the thing is nobody should take sannyas. And if nobody takes sannyas, I have no authority. Say I'm a grihastha. Hey, get rid of the temples, get rid of the sannyasis, get rid of the gurus. Life's good. Do we see a pattern here? But because due to illusion, people don't see this is actually the pattern. They think is they really care about the Vedic culture, as if. Because the point is if sannyas is valued, everybody would be gearing their life for that. We're trying to renounce the material world. Everyone's supposed to be a sannyas by mentality. The sannyas ashram is just an opportunity, at least then externally you should act like a sannyasi. And hopefully that invokes the internal mood of a sannyas. But everybody in the Vedic system is supposed to be sannyas by mentality. And why is that? And why is it the rule? Okay. You want to know a really funny thing? You ever heard in astrology of someone having a sannyas yoga? You ever heard of that? It's one yoga planets. You've heard of it? Sannyas yoga? You know what the funny thing about sannyas yoga is? Someone who has sannyas yoga means they can be renounced and function without women. But the other side is, they're practically the only ones that can actually deal with women and deal with them properly. You know what I'm saying? So if we go by that, then we should also be very careful about grihastha life. Because unless one has that mood of renunciation, how is a woman going to respect you? If you're attached, what do you offer to the woman? You have to remember, by the modern medicine, there are fertility clinics now. So technically the women don't need the men. Before, at least they could say, well, at least, okay, they're drones. But nowadays, you can't even claim that one. As Mataji was saying, her country than the biologist was saying that, in a short amount of time we'll just have women and we don't need the men anymore because we can just clone, right? So. That makes sense. So the point is people don't have the qualities to be renounced on the material platform. So therefore, sannyas just on its own without devotional service is not allowed. Because the point is where did we hear about the scriptures from? We were just so well read before we became a devotee. We already knew mano, we already knew about sannyas, we already knew about it was not for this age, that's why we never took sannyas. Then we met the devotees and all that, and then, oh wow, you guys know that also, cool, wow, we read the same books, okay, nice, okay. Right? Okay, you heard from Guru, who's heard from Prabhupada. Now Prabhupada's saying this, and he's giving sannyas. Did he introduce, animal sacrifices? Worship of the forefathers with animal sacrifices? No? Ashwamedha yajnas, Gomedha yajnas, right? The brother impregnating his, the other brother's wife because he's either incapable or dead. He introduced that, right? No. So those are the other four. So then we have to understand what sannyas is. Because the whole Vedic system, Manu, is about becoming sannyas by mentality. So the only way you can actually do it is through devotional service. In other ages, they could do it just on their material qualities. In this age, they can't. Does that make sense? Yeah, so we have to be very careful. You know, we can't be flippant, just throw the things out there. You know what I'm saying? And so, because otherwise, if you take it that, okay, you can't take sannyas, people have to be grihasthas, then wouldn't there be more focus on how to make grihastha life work by following the Vedic rules? You know, we're so worried about the Vedic rule of not taking sannyas. What about Vedic rules concerning grihasthas? Are we worried about that? Good chance, no. So is that actually a consistent mentality? What's the actual motive behind this mentality? You know, Vedically, oh, sannyas has to be perfect according to the rules. Grihasthas, we're not interested in the rules. So therefore, we're using the Vedas to get rid of the Vedas. So it's not about actually sannyas or the Vedas or grihasthas. It's just about doing whatever we want. You understand? One has to see what's the actual motive. Does that make sense? It's a very deep topic. It's taken as just a simple thought, but it's actually very deep. Because previously, you know, as I said, in the 70s, there was never more than 21 sannyasis, never less than 19. Every year, so many took sannyas. Every year, that many left. And it didn't bother anybody. Everybody was going on the service. No, now it's, oh no, but that happens. How can we go on? How can we have faith? Okay, you don't want to have faith, you won't have faith, even if everything goes perfectly. You know? That's the whole thing. Sannyasi falls down, you never saw him, didn't know him, you know, don't, you know, have never interacted. And oh, our faith, or this, that, you know. It's just like, you know, give me a break. You know what I'm saying? We want an excuse, we'll find it. We want to go back to Godhead, nothing's going to get in our way. Right? You know, we're trying to take it that there is no obstacles in devotional life. Where did we say that obstacles won't come up? Material nature, that's our business, is to create obstacles. What devotional service is offering is not being disturbed by those obstacles. Right? Let us say you're having the marathon, right? The guys are running along, doing quite fine, right? And then about, you know, 13 miles or something like that, then, you know, the runners run into the wall, right? They just can't run anymore physically, this, that. And so then they all just kind of turn and say, okay, well, that's it. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, it was a nice run for however long. Yeah, and then they all go home and everybody's happy, right? You know? Or it's that they get through the wall and then they make it to the finish line. And then we go, okay, yeah. Because if he just ran and it was so easy, right? You know, the gun goes off and he starts running fast and, you know, a couple of miles later he's still running fast and, you know, come back in another hour, he's still running fast and then he gets to the finish line and he's running fast and, you know, we'll go, wow, that's amazing. But we probably won't talk about him anymore. You know what I'm saying? The guy that goes, he paces, is this and that, the difficulties and all that, and then he gets through and, you know, and then he makes it and, you know, that's the glory. So in the material platform, we expect obstacles and they get through and we say it's glorious. But in devotional service, oh, there can't be any. Otherwise, how can I have faith? It's like, where does all this nonsense come from? Who authorizes this? Who says it's okay? Who allows it to go on? Who encourages it? Who preaches it? You understand? There's pure devotional service. And then, if you're satisfied with mixed devotional service, you can get distracted by all kinds of things. Authority issues, attachments, you know? You know what I'm saying? Attached to knowledge, attached to money, attached to sense gratification, attached to relationships, attached to the place of birth, the taste of one's own body. There's plenty of distractions. You want to go back to Godhead? That's a whole different topic. So do we want to get through it, or do we want to find an excuse? Does that make sense? Because if no one can do it, then I'm comfortable not trying. But if people are doing it, then I actually have to make an endeavor. Right? People are surrendering to Guru, moving forward in the life, that means then, you know, I should surrender. But if, you know, gurus fall down, no one surrenders, like this and that, you know, what can you do? You have to go on with your life, you have to be practical, then everyone can just, right, and just go on with their life and not get serious. So that's the point. Because otherwise, if it really affected spiritual life, it would have affected spiritual life back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It didn't. Until political correctness was introduced in this movement as a social media, none of this bothered anybody. I mean, of course, individuals were bothered. That's why they introduced political correctness. But there's no glory in that. There's zero glory for those devotees. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. Yes.
The reason why I think some of the sons didn't get their home
No, it's not so much about it not being a devotee. They just came to that platform of realization and then they just moved on. So we see Priyavrata, he moved on. So until Lord Brahma and Swayambhuva Manu, you know, came was one other who came? Just those two. Narada also came. Yeah. And then he'll do it because it's necessary. But it's like here, so there's plenty of other people to do stuff. You know what I'm saying? Having kids that you could probably find, you know, out of the 7 billion on the planet, there's a good chance most of them are into it. Right? But how many are into being, you know, taking up the responsibility of managing the universe? You know, people want the position of it, but actually doing the work, you know? It's just slightly different. You know what I'm saying? So the point, what we're trying to get at is, we've already shown how being engaged in grihastha life and doing all the duties is perfectly fine connected to Krishna. We've already shown that in the previous cantos. What we're pointing out now is that the real thing is that connection to Krishna. It's always been pointed out before, but we get it in connection with that doing these activities are fine. Because connecting anything to Krishna is fine. So they've connected renunciation to Krishna because they can do it. Point is, if they can do it, do that. Since that's the goal of life anyway. Right? At the end of life, you're trying to get to this. If they can do this now, then that's the point. So we see that Narada Muni knows what he's doing. We don't hear that out of the 10,000 sons, then so many then later on fell down and got married and this and that. We don't hear about that. So in other words, who would take that path of renunciation? Then you're going to take it as you are able to. But it's supposed to be everyone's doing that. Right? So everybody has that period of training as a brahmachari. Right, so that they learn how to detach the senses, how to have a service attitude, how to work under authority. Right, does that make sense? Then they move into the grihastha life, where then the point is not that now I'm the authority, then who's the authorities within grihastha life? You still have Guru, you still have Krishna, you still have the senior members of the community. So the same principle moves on, it just expands. Right, the brahmachari, then he's there, you have the teacher, you have a few people that you work with, and that's it. It doesn't go beyond that. The grihastha, then you have to work in a world where there's so many authorities, there's so many people to be respected and all that. So all you do is the same thing, just expanded. So that's the problem. People haven't done that, so they can't expand, so therefore they never worked under authority, therefore now as adults they can't respect authority. Not a glorious position, even if the modern world considers it very intellectual and very thoughtful and all kinds of, you know, fancy words. But the point is it's still an unglorious situation in which, when are they going to give up their attachment to their independence from the Supreme Lord? Because Krishna's authority. So, okay, I accept Krishna but nothing else, but Krishna's everything. So that means that's really, really neophyte. You know, at least they've accepted Krishna on one level. But, you know, his instructions, his social system, his universe, his laws of nature, that we don't accept. Just him as a person, you know, he's there, he's cool. Does that make sense? Yeah, so everybody's trying to get to that. That's why Vanaprastha is there, because husband and wife are supposed to become renounced. Right? And it moves at the speed is there. If someone that can move at the speed of renunciation early, then they do that. Right? Yes. It's just also, here's another way of looking at something, just as a social study, right? Is we're getting grumpy about, you know, people get renounced too early or this or that and then they fall down and all that. Who are these people? Who are we talking about? Right? Who are we talking about? Sorry? Yeah, people you know, but people you know who are all first generation, who joined basically as adults and who never had brahmachari training. Right? So they tend to fall down. But that they make an attempt at being brahmachari or something, that's good because they should have done it earlier. Generally you do, yes. You know, when you're younger you do brahmacharya, when you're older you do grihastha. Yes. So they were, when they're younger, did grihastha, when they're older do brahmacharya, and then if they're successful, great, and if not, then they go back into grihastha. But at least there'll be better grihasthas now than they were before. Right? In other words, those who are sannyasis, and how you say, grihasthas, then they give that up, right? Yeah. And then they're not actually suited for that. They're not very good at being brahmachari sannyasis or vanaprastas. They're a bit grumpy. Yeah. But doing that for so many years, when they actually finally do get married again, they're actually they're much better grihasthas now than they were before, you know? So at least they learn something, they improve, because they introduce brahmachari ashram into their life. Though late, but that. The second generation, do you see them as the problem? Anybody's taking sannyas early and things like that, falling down, and we heard any? Yeah. No. Generally, they're just simple. They go on as brahmacharis, no problem. Or they quite easily, happily get married and things go on. Because they had the brahmachari training, so now they can be grihasthas. So we have to understand is that What is useful for the first generation, that's not the standard for the movement of Lord Chaitanya, or the movement, the Vaishnava movement that's, you know, eternal. So the first generation gives more credit and importance to themselves than they should. You know, they think that if I can't do it, nobody can do it. But the point is no. That's not how it works.
So we're actually improving their social skills by going forward and then falling down.
They are, unfortunately. It's reversed. It's not nice.
No.
It's not recommended at all. Because
the
point
system is coming from a social perspective, so that's actually improper.
Yeah, that's coming from a first generation perspective. That's not proper. And much of it's also coming from baby boomers. Sad to say. You know what I'm saying?
No other institute has to announce it's too difficult. There are so many rules and I know I'm rushing the road. We apply science for many years and it's very qualified.
Yeah, but who creates that? Again, first generation. What did Prabhupada say about bureaucracy? He didn't appreciate it. What did he say about centralization? He didn't appreciate it. He said, these things will kill the individual's, you know, natural inspiration and spontaneity. And our movement's all about the individual developing. And we insist on centralizing and bureaucratizing. And so therefore, then someone who's not very sincere, they could get themselves through the sannyas process. Someone who's actually sincere, where they're not worried about themselves, they wouldn't even try. It's actually insulting. Who created that? Not Prabhupada, not the Vedic system. We created ourselves. And who's generally making all these rules, controlling it? It'll be generally some grihasthas, because of political correctness. You know? Because of the neophyte mentality, we're so worried that someone might fall down, that therefore better, okay, we'll give them sannyas posthumously. Because once they're dead, we don't have to worry they'll fall down.
Put a danda on the fire.
Yeah, yeah. You know, then they take it. You know, it means he dies, you go give him the bath, put him in saffron cloth, give him the danda and all that, then bring him out like that. You know, the only difference is the other guys lay down, this guy you sit him up with his danda, and then you burn him there, and you just make sure that people don't think it's a Buddhist monk, you know. That's yeah, yeah. But whatever it is. But the point is these are social issues created by the mundane mentality. So that's what Bhagavatam's about, how to give up that mundane mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Influenced by the external energy of Lord Vishnu, Prajapati Daksha begot 10,000 sons in the womb of his wife, Panchajani. These sons, oh, okay, because she was the daughter of the king of Panchajana. So he's Panchajani. Okay. These sons, who are all of the same character and mentality, were known as the Haryashvas. Ordered by their father to create more and more population, the Haryashvas went west to the place where the river Sindhu, now the Indus, meets the Arabian Sea. In those days, this was the site of a holy lake named Narayana Saras. There were many, many saintly persons. The Haryashvas began practicing austerities, penances, and meditation, which are the engagements of the highly exalted, renounced order of life. However, when Srila Narad Muni saw these boys engaged in such commendable austerities, simply for material creation, he thought it better to release them from this tendency. Right? Okay. Daksha does this? Okay. But, you know, everybody doing it? Yeah. Narad Muni described to the boys their ultimate goal of life, and advised them not to become ordinary karmis to beget children. Thus, all the sons of Daksha became enlightened and left, never to return. Now, we describe this. It's like we're going to go through this chapter. Now, it's going to be interesting at the end of this chapter how many of us are then totally renounced and give up all material endeavor. Right? And so if that happens, great. That's what happened here. But if we don't, then that also answers your question. We always deal with it, you know, that's what he called it, that thing. You know, we become devotees and all that. No, but what if everybody became devotees and who would do anything? How would the world go on? It's like, since when is everyone going to become devotees? Yeah, so it's like, you know, suddenly tomorrow everyone takes sannyas and like that. You know, it's like, yeah, that you know, your dog goes by with it, really? You know, like that. You know. And then you take a parakeet better. You too. You know, so. Yeah, so.
On the rickshaw wallets with their dandas.
Yeah. So it's like that. Prajapati Daksha, who was very sad at the loss of his sons, begot 1,000 more sons in the womb of his wife, Panchajani, and ordered them to increase progeny. These sons, who were named the Savalasvas, also engaged in worshipping Vishnu to beget children. But Narad Muni convinced them to become mendicants and not beget children. Foiled twice in his attempts to increase population, Prajapati Daksha became most angry at Narad Muni and cursed him, saying that in the future he would not be able to stay anywhere. Since Narad Muni, being fully qualified, was fixed in tolerance, he accepted Daksha's curse. That means he's in a position of, as him being Paramahamsa, he doesn't have to accept the curse. No. But he thought, well, you know, that'll be nice for his service. Then he can always travel and preach. Yes. You know, he can have a reason to always travel, but he doesn't have to follow. You know, it's just like Parikit Maharaj. He was powerful enough, he could counter the curse. Yeah. But he thought, you know, it's Krishna's arrangement, so he accepted it. Right? Sloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. 1-9. Daksha sends his sons to perform austerities in order to become successful Prajapatis, and Narad Muni instructs them. Verses 10-20. The Haryasvas assimilate Narad Muni's instructions. Verses 21-33. The Haryasvas take sannyas, and Daksha's second attempt is foiled. Verses 34-44. Daksha curses Narad Muni. Verses 1-9. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Impelled by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, Prajapati Daksha begot 10,000 sons in the womb of Panchajani, Akshini. My dear king, these sons were called the Haryasvas. My dear king, all the sons of Prajapati Daksha were alike in being very gentle and obedient to the orders of their father. When their father ordered them to beget children, they all went in the western direction. In the west, where the river Sindhu meets the sea, there is a great place of pilgrimage known as Narayana Sadas. Many sages and others advanced in spiritual consciousness live there. In that holy place, the Haryasvas began regularly touching the lake's waters and bathing in them. Gradually, becoming very much purified, they became inclined towards the activities of Paramahamsas. Nevertheless, because their father had ordered them to increase the population, they performed severe austerities to fulfill his desire. Right? So they're already, the mentality is inclined towards Paramahamsas. Therefore, we can see there's not a problem in them. It's not that here are people committed to being grihasthas and doing those duties, and Narad Muni came along and dissuaded them. We're talking about people who they were inclined towards the Paramahamsa position. So therefore, Narad Muni encouraging them, because otherwise who else is going to encourage them? Right? You know, the local Mudiwala or something, you know. You know, I've been watching you guys, you know. You guys should be. Yeah, so it's, does that make sense? Does that answer your question? Yeah? You know, in the simplest way. Does that make sense? In other words, the answer to your question is very simple. They have the nature, they take sannyas. They don't have the nature, they wait. So you have to know the nature. And then, and what's the mood and everything. Does that make sense? That's the simple answer. Yes. But because there's so much behind that question, therefore, your 20-minute discussion. Right? Yes.
It's quite interesting. There are many, and they have the same nature.
Yes.
It's rare.
Yes, yes. That's why Prabhupada says, Daksha is expert. So whatever he wants, he gets. That's why he's you could say he's the acharya when it comes to producing children. Mm-hmm. Whatever kind of child he wants, he gets. It'll come up later, probably mentioned when he decides, okay, we're having daughters. He gets daughters.
So then this mentality that Narad Muni taps into, how did that come about? Was that also
He's focusing on that, but where's the background from it? Where does he have that potency? He got it from the blessings of the Lord.
So that would be there.
So now if the children were inclined at that, then they could go that way.
Yes.
And if they were, so in other words, they were dutiful.
Yes.
They were inclined towards the Paramahamsa stage, but they were dutiful, so they were going to go that direction because their father ordered them.
Yes.
But when Narad Muni points out that there's higher duties,
yes.
Right? Means to the father, there's of course... But to the Supreme Lord, then that's the highest duty.
Yes.
So, since both of them would, you understand?
Yes.
So the one would be focused on the Supreme Lord, his devotional service. The other one, then how Daksha is giving, is quite a mixed platform. It's basically like Bhakti Mishra Karma.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even Karma Mishra Bhakti. Right? If it's Karma Mishra Bhakti, then we would say it's a comfortable position. But it's basically Bhakti Mishra Karma. One day when the great sage Narad saw those boys performing such fine austerities to increase the population, Narad approached them, right? Because fine means it's not that they're doing the austerities, because Hiranyakashipu also did austerities. But they weren't fine austerities. He did extreme austerities, right? Because you say highly educated. What does that mean? You know, from Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives the definition. Right? Means educated means you have a body of knowledge that you're good in. Right? And then at the same time as you have the element that somebody is, morally stout, so they're stable. So that's good. But when the two are together, that's called highly learned. So in other words, there's education, both intellectually and character-wise. That's highly learned. So fine austerities means they have the right attitude and they're austere. Mm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we don't see it mentioned that Daksha did fine austerities. Mm. He did, austerities, and he did them very well, right? He's a very pious person, very focused, knows what to do. But here it's fine. There's the mentality there, that humility, that simplicity, that purity, and they're doing the austerities. So Narad Muni, being such a person, he could perceive that. Right? Just like we see in that story when Arjuna went to South India and those five lakes with the five crocodiles in them. Mm-hmm. Right? But because he had a benediction that he could not be defeated by any aquatic. Mm-hmm. Right? So then he could defeat those crocodiles. Mm-hmm. So after defeating the crocodiles, they turned into apsaras. Mm-hmm. And then he asked, well, how is it your apsaras, how did you become crocodiles? Because they were walking along one day and they saw this brahmachari doing, austerities and yoga and meditation, and he was really, really bright and effulgent. And being proud of their feminine graces, then they thought, hey, let's have some fun here. But after they had some fun, then the brahmachari, woke up, understood their desire, and then cursed them, right, to become crocodiles, right? Because what's the nature of a crocodile? Even a crocodile's not hungry, it'll attack you, right? Yeah. So they had no need to interact with this brahmachari. They weren't going because they needed a husband, and and they know that, better have good brahmachari, properly trained, he'll lead them, he'll take them to the highest. They were just, because we can. We're apsaras, we can disturb their mind. So he said, turn them into crocodiles. So in other words, he had that purity, they couldn't see it. Right? Or let's say Markandeya, also the same. Wasn't it Markandeya? That Indra was getting worried because he was doing austerities and he sent, Kamandev, and that was Markandeya. Yeah, he sent, he was doing his austerities, so he's worried he's going to become powerful and try to take over his kingdom. So it wasn't, he didn't like mostly sent down one apsara. He sent down a whole, gaggle of, apsaras. And he sent, spring personified went, death personified went, Cupid himself went, all kinds of Gandharvas, and that went, and, singing music, and the wind is blowing perfectly, and everything is just like that. And so it's all happening, and they're all like, happy in their performance of this, and this is going to be good, and all that, and he's not responding. He is still in deep meditation. Then they go, uh-oh, time to get out of here, like that. You understand? So they can't see. So what we're pointing out is this kind of purity, to be able to see what is able to do, that those who have that purity, like Narad Muni, can see it. So that's the thing. Those who can see that, then they do. And even if not, what's the big deal? Right? If there was a sincere attempt, then the benefit is there. So much has been done. Does that make sense? The great sage Narada said, my dear Haryasvas, you have not seen the extremities of the earth. There is a kingdom where only one man lives, and where there is a hole from which, having entered, no one emerges. A woman there who is extremely unchaste adorns herself with various attractive dresses, and the man who lives there is her husband. In that kingdom, there is a river flowing in both directions, a wonderful home made of 25 materials, a swan that vibrates various sounds, and an automatically revolving object made of sharp razors and thunderbolts. You have not seen all this, and therefore you are inexperienced boys without advanced knowledge. How then will you create progeny? 6-8, Srila Prabhupada comments.
Narad Muni saw that the boys known as the Haryashvas were already purified because of living in that holy place. We're practically ready for liberation, right? So he's seeing this, right? Father's not seeing this, others are not seeing, but Narad Muni, right? Why then should they be encouraged to become entangled in family life, which is so dark that once having entered it, one cannot leave it? Through this analogy, Narad Muni asked them to consider why they should follow their father's order to be entangled in family life. Indirectly, he asked them to find within the cores of their hearts the situation of the Supersoul, Lord Vishnu, for then they would truly be experienced, right? Because they were purified, but instead of going towards the worldly direction, if they went towards understanding the Supersoul, then they would be actually move beyond. Because as we said, last chapter was making the point that you can, previous is that you can only come to the platform of purity when you taste the Lord's sweetness. Right? So when you connect yourself to the Lord, that's where we give up the material. So we see so many desires within our heart are going away just in our daily practice of devotional service. That's because of the taste of Krishna consciousness. Right? And more major ones need a more major taste of the Lord's sweetness.
Yeah.
But once that's tasted, it'll go away. So that's why we have to keep doing the process, because the only way for it to go away is the taste in Krishna consciousness. It's not that something else will create it. Right? So these boys have the position. If they can contact the Supersoul, then they can actually come to that Paramahamsa platform.
Yeah.
And if they can't, then they'll naturally go back and get married.
Yeah.
Right? And they'll be quite advanced to be good grihasthas, do a good job. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But if one can do that, then what's the point? What's the need? Mm-hmm. Right? So. In other words, one who is too involved in this material environment and does not look within the core of his heart is increasingly entangled in the material energy. Narad Muni's purpose was to get the sons of Prajapati Daksha to divert their attention towards spiritual realization instead of involving themselves in the ordinary but complicated affairs of propagation. Mm-hmm. The same advice was given by Prahlad Maharaj to his father. Right? So, this is there. Now, here's the thing. Was Narad Muni's instructions popular?
No.
Was Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his father popular? So therefore, from these examples, are we really interested in what's popular? So people try to make it a principle of the movement that we have to be popular. They really miss the point of our acharyas. Because what's popular is sense gratification. And what's not popular is getting out of the material world, going back to Godhead. So for the intelligent individuals, they take up this path. And for the ordinary duffers, then, hey, popular is popular. You know? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 755. Tat sadu manye suravara dehinam sada samud vigna diyam asad grahat hitvatma patam griham andakupam Vanam gato yad dharim ashrayet. In the dark well of family life, one is always full of anxiety because of having accepted a temporary body. When one wants to free himself from this anxiety, one should immediately leave family life and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan. Narad Muni advised the Haryasvas not to enter household life. Since they were already advanced in spiritual knowledge, why should they be entangled in this way? Narad Muni continued, "Alas, your father is omniscient, but you do not know his actual order. Without knowing the actual purpose of your father, how will you create progeny?" Right. So the real purpose is to serve the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, he's a Prajapati; he's carrying out the order of the Lord. So then, the real point is becoming a servant of the Lord.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So from that position, then becoming a servant of the Lord. That's the whole point. So here, then we can see is this element of leaving grihastha life applies to everybody. Right? Does that make sense? Because if we're taking shelter of grihastha life, that this will please us, please the senses, and that will make us happy, then we're entangled.
Yes.
But if we see grihastha life as a means to serve the Lord, yes, then we won't. But Prajapati Daksha doesn't know how to give this. And since they're inclined, if they were inclined towards grihastha life, but they were more pure, he'd just teach them the teachings that were already there previously in Prithu Maharaj,
yes,
and Priyavrata.
Yes.
Right? Because he taught Priyavrata how to be a Paramahamsa and a grihastha.
Yes.
Right? But now these boys are inclined towards that position, so they can be Paramahamsas.
Yes.
They don't need to be grihasthas, right?
Yes.
So that's then taking shelter of devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that one gives up the ashram itself. One gives up thinking the ashram is actually the shelter. Devotional service is the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if that's there, then one will naturally either perform the duties in grihastha life, or one will move on to vanaprastha, sannyasa, whatever is appropriate, right, for the particular individual in their situation.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that, yes.
The guru is know, he know what is the best for the disciple.
That's the mandate.
Yes.
One should know natures, one should know this, one should know, and so then when one directs according to what actually works for the particular individual.
Better than the father or mother.
Generally. But, you know, it's always father, mother, and teacher, it's a combination. But of them, the teacher is the senior of them.
Yes.
Right after that's the mother, and then after that's the father.
Yes.
Right? As far as you have to consider whatever they, you
yes
know, they feel. Right? But as far as the position goes, social position, it'll be teacher, father, mother.
Yes.
Right? Because
yes
the mother will get her work done through the father anyway.
Yes.
So when he talks, you get his and her opinion.
Yes.
So you understand?
It's a teamwork.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like that. But it's the debt you owe the mother is 10 times that of the father, is what they put into taking care of.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the debt you owe the teacher that yes teaches you the subtleties or the of spiritual life,
yes,
that's 10 times the father also.
Yes.
So in that way, it's the same like the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But one's on the material, one's on the spiritual.
Yes.
So because one is based on detachment, the other one on attachment, detachment is superior to attachment.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, let's say if you have a material sannyasi and a material grihastha, the sannyasi is senior.
Yes. Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
So, like that. But these three are always there in one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, of course, it's ideal that they're all following the Vedic culture and interested in devotional service, so that makes it a lot easier. If they're not, then one may not consider, you know, the others so much. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the point. With time, then you're going to have those who, you know, their whole family, because you know it back to your grandfather, generally.
Mm.
So you're going to have those who, their grandparents were devotees.
Yes.
You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that make sense? By the third generation, technically, their grandparents are devotees.
Mm.
So then you consider, you know, everybody's considered.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So, stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Prema ki.